So it looks like the White House changed CIA talking points that called the attack in Benghazi the work of Al-Qaeda. The teensy tiny edit they made, the Al-Qaeda reference became an act of extremism, which then fed into the spontaneous mob narrative that, thanks to Susan Rice, spread like an office cold. From there, more people died. So now we know who pushed the video, I think. Now the question is why, and will they tell us? They're trying hard not to. This is an administration suffering from word-a-phobia, fear of using language to accurately describe stuff. They still consider Fort Hood massacre workplace violence, which is like calling Ted Bundy a bad boyfriend. Video caused spontaneous upset is this week's euphemism for what we naively call terror. You've heard of doublespeak? This is triplespeak, designed to confuse the listener and hide unpleasant facts. But this isn't a George Orwell book, and four Americans are dead. So why this latest example of Obama speak? The timing. An Al-Qaeda attack before the election? That's like a jerk throwing up in the punch bowl. The whole Obama destroying Al-Qaeda story becomes shakier than an IKEA bookcase. So instead, let's blame an amateur video maker with about as much influence as a HuffPo blogger. In plain language, it's a cover-up. And so as the president talks about how great education is, he's really the great unlearner, meaning I get dumber every time I hear him, which is why the more he talks, the more I understand him.
Brilliantly put by Mr. Greg Gutfeld of the Fox News Channel's The Five. On this November 19, 2012, it's 1 minute after the hour, right here on Reese on the Radio. My cohort, my Ace Boone Coon, my right hand, my compadre. What else are you?
Su mejor amiga.
Number.
No, best friend. Mejor best amiga friend.
I know.
But yes.
Yes. Anyway. Mary, why are you bugging this year, of course?
Most important of all wife.
There you go. Most important of all wife. I did say my wife. So that last week. We're paying attention.
Well, that should have been firstly.
No, you know what I meant. It's always a debate. Isn't it?
Always.
Yeah. Nonetheless, we're back.
Never a dull time in our house.
You know, there's this big conversation today. Everywhere I look, I mean, I just listened to the opening piece on the O'Reilly Factor just now. He opened up the show. Everyone is talking about Mitt Romney's comments about why it is that he lost the election to President Obama. And I'm reading the quote here. It said, what the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government. You know, he went after the Latinos by giving them that faux amnesty, telling gays that he supports their gay marriage, handing out food stamps in record numbers. You know, and there are Republicans out there who are absolutely pissed off, for lack of a better word, or term for that matter, are pissed off because he said this. And the bottom line is that I think what's happening to our country today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that conservatives are retreating. Now, you know, I talked about this with Sal up in Massachusetts. You heard him a couple of days ago. We talked with this with Mike. We talked about this with White Mike. And, you know, I was having the discussion with these two gentlemen, our friends to this show, of course, contributors here on Reason Radio. And I was making the argument that conservatism has to continue to be promoted throughout these groups. We've got to get guys like Marco Rubio talking to Latinos. We cannot have Alan West singing Running Down a Dream to a bunch of white constituents. We need to show black people, African-Americans who are in the conservative party, and show them that hard work and those things are beneficial to them as a people or to them as individuals, much less forget about them as a people because they're not aliens, for crying out loud. Unless, of course, you're illegal because then you're an alien. But the bottom line is this has to be a conversation out there. And Mitt Romney is 100% right, is that this country is falling into the trap of neediness. we're all becoming needy in a lot of ways. I try to fight it every day. But the hell if I sometimes sit up there and go, you know what? I'm watching the rest of these sons of bitches take, and I'm going, look, and they get to do whatever it is that they want. I'm even frightened that I'm falling by the wayside here, folks, in my heart of hearts.
That you're what?
I'm falling by the wayside.
You're falling by the wayside because of what?
Because I believe that, you know what? I think good guys finish last. A guy like Mitt Romney should not finish last. But I believe that Republicans today who are outraged behind what it is that he had to say are proving that the only way for the Republicans to win, for conservatism to win, is that they are going to have to drop their core principles. And they're going to let the bad guys win because they don't believe that they can. And I believe that they can.
Republicans didn't. None of us won. Okay. So we didn't win. So now you have to have a reason on why we didn't win. So, of course, who are you going to blame it on? You're going to blame it on Mitt Romney. How about trying to blame it on the morons that went out and voted for Barack Obama, or all the voter fraud that took place? All the places that got all Obama votes, not a single Mitt Romney vote came in, not out of any of these little small towns that they keep talking about. How come you're not blaming it on them? Why are you blaming it on Mitt Romney? Because he didn't get out there and say, you know what, Obama, you didn't do this and you didn't do that, and the American people want to know why. Maybe you didn't handle it in the best possible way, but if there was going to be voter fraud and all these idiots that have consumed this country, it wouldn't have mattered what you said.
Exactly what the point is. But see, what I'm hearing is that the reason why guys like Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, a Republican, Newt Gingrich, on the Sunday morning programs, well, he was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. He said it this week. George Will on This Week said as well. These Republicans are out there running around saying,
hey, what is Donald Trump saying? I haven't heard from him in a while.
Donald Trump is on his Facebook page denouncing this election. He doesn't care who it is that he offends. I give him credit for that. But the truth of the matter is that these establishment Republicans are running out there saying, don't offend the voters. Don't offend them because they're never, ever going to vote for you. And remember what these people want. What they want to do is win elections. What is a candidate willing to do to win elections? I'll tell you
one thing that Mitt Romney shouldn't have done. The one of the biggest mistakes of the whole campaign.
Go ahead. Do you believe the 47%?
It was. Because it gave...
Right.
We know what he meant. Okay, those of us that are of sound mind and body
mm-hmm.
know what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us that have a lick of common sense and understand where he was coming from know exactly what he meant. But it was just something for them to grab a hold of,
right.
And they grabbed
and
a hold of that joker, and they ran with
right.
it.
They trumpeted it. And what they could use was that narrative. You're absolutely right.
Because that's the only excuse every Obama supporter that I talked to.
Said the 47%.
It was either 47, no. Well, first it was Planned Parenthood. Then when I got
right.
them on that, it was, oh, well, you part of 47% too. I'm 47%. He don't care about you. He don't care about me.
Yeah. But what hurt that was, the two narratives of the 47% was that it was a private conversation. This is Mitt Romney talking to people like him, because they use the words wealthy donors. And what it was Mitt Romney talking to wealthy donors, talking about the rest of us. And that, of course, put it in a bad light. I think you're 100% right about that, that anybody with a sound mind, as you said, and body, would know exactly what it was he was talking about. But it was used as a trumpeting point for liberals call him out of touch. And it worked.
Poor people, middle class people, people that weren't born with money, seem to think that other people that may not have necessarily been born with money, that like Jay-Z, you know, he was born a crack dealer,
right.
And then he got a rap career, you know, he took that money he was using to sell drugs and bought studio time, right? So he came, he made a big come up. But he's always going to be from the hood, so he'll always understand those people in the hood and have that mentality. Wrong answer, idiots. Because when you leave the hood,
You leave the hood. I know where I came from, but my ass ain't going back. That was the whole purpose of trying to make a come up. Get out and make something of yourself. Just because he may understand your struggle when you sitting on the church line trying to get some cheese, the best welfare cheese out there, doesn't mean that his ass is understanding you now when he's riding around in his Lamborghini with his baby mama and his baby, shutting down hospitals and shit.
But what's upsetting me about all of this, what's truly upsetting me about this in general, is the fact that I believe now that conservatives are allowing liberals to win this argument. And they're retreating because they lost. And they're looking at this, in other words, here is an opportunity, and there was, and there always has been an opportunity to educate people like Obama voters. There's an opportunity there to let them know what it is that's going on and let them know the truth, to speak honestly to them. And now that Republicans have lost this election, what they're seeing is that there's some sort of effectiveness in retreat. And it's wrong. It's ridiculous. And something's got to be done about it. I think that when I'm watching these people retreat like that, guys like Newt Gingrich, who challenged the media the way that he did during the primaries, regardless of his loss, this guy put them on notice. And they were fearful of him. The media had to back off from him. You saw the shellacking that Newt Gingrich gave to John King of CNN when he tried to ask him about that stupid little report that ABC News did about his ex-wife. He attacked them and he won. He was applauded and rewarded for it in that South Carolina primary because of it. Because the media because the people didn't want to take it anymore. And once you have an honest dialogue with the American people, that's how you win. But now I'm seeing people just retreat out of fear and to gain votes. And you never compromise your principles. And I know Dennis is going to applaud that because that's the point that he was making weeks ago, or just the day after the election, when he and White Mike got into that dispute, you know, about, you know, the religion and dealing with the religious right and things of that nature, I guess, where Mike was coming from, where Dennis was saying that you never compromise your principles at all. You must stand steadfast. And I understood where White Mike was coming from, and what the reason why I say I understood where he was coming from was saying that you can't align yourself if it's going to alienate people. You cannot take a stance that alienates people. I get that. The 47% is a perfect example of alienating people, especially when you have a narrative of a media out there that is going to trumpet that and to twist it around to make it look negative. You do not do yourself any favors by giving them ammunition. But it doesn't mean that I'm not concerned, because watching each and every one of these establishment Republicans running for the hills over Mitt Romney's comments, when I see them doing that, now I see they might be willing to compromise their principles for votes. And that should never, ever be the case. It just drives me up the wall that it makes others, and I'm sure it makes many of you, wonder what you're going to do, what we're going to do next. There are people out there who don't know what it is that we're going to do, whether or not we just lost the election, or whether or not only did we just lose the election, that we lost the American people. If we did, so be it. But now, we've got to find a better way. We've got to find a way to articulate our message. We've got to find a way to articulate it to the people that matter the most. You know, I'll tell you this. The African-American vote will be up for grabs in 4 years, folks. It will be. And I'll tell you why. Barack Obama will be no more.
he'll be out of office. Now, African Americans will have to vote on principle. Or they'll vote the party line.
Or they'll do worse.
They won't show up. They won't be able to show up. Now, I don't know what the numbers were, but JC, see if you can find this out. Find out what the electorate was like for African-American voters for John Kerry and for Al Gore.
Now, I know it was overwhelming for Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton got a majority of the black vote because, of course, his appearance on shows like Arsenio. But check out what Al Gore and the Al Gore Bush and the John Kerry Bush numbers were for African American voters, and see if there are any numbers on voter turnout based upon, I guess what I'm looking for is how many of the registered voters showed up, because I'm sure the numbers were low. And I'm almost certain that you'll see that. You won't see numbers like 90-something percent. You'll probably see a lot less than that. But I think that in 4 years, after this is over, and they no longer have that quote-unquote black candidate, that African Americans will no longer be enthused. They'll say their goodbyes and they'll keep it moving. I want to find this this piece of audio. Cornel West, when he was talking about Al Sharpton and Michael Eric Dyson and Melissa Harris Perry, when he was talking about how, you know, they're using their accessibility to the White House and President Obama to ignore the issues that are happening under this presidency. Here it is.
I love Brother Mike Dyson, too. But we're living in a society where everybody's up for sale. Everything's up for sale. And he and Brother Sharpton and Sister Melissa and others, they have sold their souls for a mess of Obama pottage. And we invite them back to the black prophetic tradition after Obama leaves. But at the moment, they want insider access, and they want to tell those kind of lies. They want to turn their back to poor and working people. And it's a sad thing to see them as apologists for the Obama administration in that way, given the kind of critical background that all of them have had at some point.
And that's the state now, because someone's obviously realized that Cornel West has clearly stated that what people are doing are obviously, you know, they have become apologists for this administration, for this black president, simply for the, you know, reasons that are obvious. And it's because he's black. They don't care that the unemployment rate goes higher in their communities. They don't care if more and more of them fall out of some sort of economic prosperity. They don't care. They've never, ever appeared to care. They've ignored it. And this administration appears to win. Or the ideology of liberals appears to win. But when you start to watch Republicans retreat, it scares the hell out of me. It's going to scare the hell out of you. You'll see what happens. Yeah. I'll quote Rush Limbaugh and what he said over the last couple of weeks. What are Republicans going to have to do in order to get the Latino vote, which has been talked about for weeks, the Latino vote, the Latino vote, the Latino vote? What are they going to have to do? Are they now going to have to be for amnesty in order for them to get elected? Is that what it is they're going to have to do? And I would ask African Americans, I want them to really, really think about this, because I think it makes a very, very strong point. There are no news reports
about how Republicans can get black voters. There are none. There's not one liberal, not one media outlet asking Republicans, how do you get the black vote? They're only talking about how you can get the Latino vote. Why?
Because the Latino people are bringing in revenue. They own companies like Bimbo that wants to take over Hostess. They have all these little pastries and stuff like that that they, you know, Goya. They have, what else do they have? Goya, Bimbo.
They've got more than that.
I mean, I know. They've, you know.
No. I'm saying they've got more than just the businesses and the money. I'll tell you what it is that they have. The Latino vote has something that the African-American, think about the number. If Latinos outnumber African-Americans 2-1, right?
Well, yeah, they've got the number.
But the Democrats only got 72% of the vote. Think about that. They outnumber blacks 2-1, but 72% of the vote went to Democrats.
72% of what vote?
Of the Latino vote.
Okay.
Went to Democrats.
Well, yeah.
Well, think about that. That means what? They're not getting the Latino vote isn't overwhelmingly going. It's largely going to the Democrat Party, but it's not overwhelmingly. Those kind of numbers, that's something to consider. Most Latinos, now it's been reported that some Latinos don't even like Barack Obama. They don't even like his policies. They just don't trust Republicans. Well, what does that mean? That means that Republicans can reach out to them and earn their trust. They don't care about the African-American vote because they know how African-Americans are going to vote already. Your vote is not up for grabs. So no one's paying attention to you, folks. Not one person is paying attention to you. Even black media is not paying attention to you. They know that. In fact, black media only pays attention to black voters when they don't vote for Democrats. The only time they're ever paying attention. That should say something. That should say something to each and every one of you. And I would be concerned about that. We're going to lose plenty more elections in 2016. We've got to start now. The ground game must start now. Immediately. Get it together. Do not retreat. I see these people retreating. Don't retreat. You can't be afraid now. You can't start giving these people, you can't start giving in to these people. They will take advantage of it and destroy the party. That's the reason why people are screaming for a third party. Because they're giving up on conservatism. They're giving up on it. And it's ridiculous. It's the dumbest way to go. It's the dumbest way to go. We'll talk about this more when we get back. Plus, we've got other news, you know, the stuff that's going on in Gaza. Oh, and in Israel. It's a mess out there. And it's going to turn into a full-scale war. And I think that's only days away. I really, really think it's only days away. And that's the part that scares me the most. We'll be back here, Stone Temple Pilots, Streets on the Radio.
Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Wow, we're in stereo.
Right here on Reese on the Radio, bottom of the hour on November 19th, 2012. Let's get Dennis in here because Dennis was really, really vocal on this the day after the election about principle when it comes to a candidate and this election. I mean, Dennis, do you agree with me here that there needs to be an outreach, not a retreat?
There has to be an outreach, but you cannot retreat in what you believe in. You know, what do most people say when they talk about the parties? Do you remember George Wallace? Well, you wouldn't remember George Wallace, but he ran on the slogan, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the parties. And how many times do you hear the people say, you know, they're all alike. All the parties are alike. What the hell am I going to even bother voting for? They're all the same.
Right.
You have to... And Truman said, you know, you can't have a Democrat against a Democrat because a Democrat will win every time.
Right.
I've got some breaking news stories for you, though.
Did you,
I don't know if you can handle it.
Do you believe that Mitt Romney was a moderate?
Yeah.
Do you believe he was do you think he was just slightly right of center? Or do you think he was right down the middle?
Slightly right of center, but you've got to remember when he ran against Ted Kennedy, he moved to the left of Ted, and that pissed off a lot of people. When he started talking about breaking the glass ceiling on women, I said, what the hell is this? Is he think he's Ted? People aren't going to go for Ted Light. They're going to go for the real thing.
Yeah, but Ted...
Remember
Ted,
when he ran against Ted Kennedy for the Senate?
Right, but think about that, because that was in 92, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about that during that time, 92, the quote-unquote Camelot effect was so strong. I don't think it's that way today, but it was so strong in Massachusetts.
Joe, or Joe Kennedy III, or whatever number you want, he just came out of nowhere and won a congressional seat, Barney Frank's old seat.
Yeah, but think about how he won Barney Frank's old seat. There's no way in Massachusetts they're going to give up. I mean, the fact that Scott Brown won was amazing, but consider who Scott Brown was running against. If Elizabeth Warren had ran against Scott Brown during, in 2008?
No, what happened was the Democrats were sleeping and they thought Coakley was a shoo-in and she had a tin ear and she was in D.C. raising money and Scott was at the hockey games and the ball games and hustling votes. And they thought that, well, it was Ted's seat, so nobody is going to beat anyone in Ted's seat, and they got fooled. And what beat Scott Brown, two things, Barack Obama, and also he pissed off Mayor Mumbles Menino. Now, Mumbles likes Scott, believe me. But the thing of it is that once Scott Brown had Ray Flynn on his TV ad, that was enough. That did it. Because Mumbles has Irish Alzheimer's. He forgets everything but grudges.
Right.
And that was it. Even though Raybo hadn't been here for 20 years as mayor,
right,
made no difference to Mumbles Menino. So he got the troops out.
You know, the interesting part about this particular campaign and sort of like the post-campaign fever that's happening now in the Republican Party is that having believed all that time that they were a shoo-in to win, because it looked good. I don't care what anybody says about Mitt Romney and whether or not he's a moderate. We look good to win. But the post-election, to realize that 3 million Republicans just didn't show up. And the fact that there were people out there who just were not willing to vote for Mitt Romney for reasons that they're conservative, but they just didn't want to vote for Mitt Romney because of, you know, his 2001 statements, you know, when he did the TV interview.
Or
I'm sure you remember this. In 2001, when he said that he's not like the establishment of the Republican Party, people were very offended by that, would not vote for him for those reasons.
But you got to look at it at this. How many in the last few election cycles have Republicans not voted either? To get a better view, if it was 3 million Republicans, take a look at 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and down the line, and then measure that, and then you'd get a better idea if it's truly as you think it is, that the Republicans sat in their hands.
Well, that's interesting that you say this, Dennis, because you know what part that bothers me the most? Is that in the beginning, during the primary, people wouldn't take Rick Santorum just too right, wouldn't take Newt Gingrich because he's got too much baggage. Everyone was looking for somebody who was the least offensive, so to speak. You know, who's the one that's not going to tick off voters who's going to tick off voters the least? We need to find somebody who's in they were looking for a moderate. That's the thing.
For a conservative.
What was
I didn't vote for Romney in the primary. I didn't support him at all because I was a delegate at the convention, the state convention, when he became governor, and he said something to offend all of us. Every time he opened his mouth, there was something liberal. When he said, I'm so proud of my mother who helped women get abortions before Roe v. Wade. Oh, that really went over big.
Oh, get out of here. He did not say that.
I was standing right in front of him when he was at the podium. He said that.
That in and of itself is ridiculous.
Well, that's what Mitt said. Hey, as he was running down to take his acceptance speech, I gave him a high five. I could tell he had sweaty hands. That's how close I was to the guy. I mean, what more do you need? He said, I am proud of my woman, my mother, who helped women get abortions before Roe v. Wade, because she had run for the Senate in Michigan. So what do you do with a guy like that? Well, you just hold your nose and, you know, you go. If you're a Republican official or moderately a Republican, you hold your nose and take one for the Gipper, you know?
Yeah.
You might not be enthusiastic, but you do what you can.
We don't have a conservative right now. Everyone's looking at Marco Rubio because of one thing, and I think that what this is becoming, and we're going to have a guest on tomorrow, and I'm trying to confirm him later on today, a guy by the name of Dr. Robert Brown. In fact, let me just make sure I got his information. No, sorry, Robert Rose. I apologize. He is an education expert and the author of Racism 70s Style. And apparently he says here, the 2012 election results made it evident that there's still a racial divide in our country. And so he's going to talk about why there's still a racial divide in our country and what are the causes of that divide. And I believe that Republicans are really starting to fall right into the hands of that sort of racial divide by talking about Marco Rubio is the next candidate for president.
He'll have problems. And the word is Ukraine. You say, what the hell
he'll
is that going to do with it?
You said the problem is Ukraine?
Yep, because he wants Ukraine to be part of NATO. Russia won't tolerate that. He'll lead us to another war.
I think we're beyond that right now, aren't we?
Beyond what?
Aren't we beyond that leading us to another war?
No. Russia, Ukraine means borderland.
Oh, yeah, of
and
course.
And Russia, it's in the Russian sphere of influence. They're not going to tolerate Ukraine being part of NATO, I can tell you that right now. And as Pat Buchanan said, are you going to go to war over South Ossetia? I don't think so.
Probably not. Hey, you know.
Anyway, I got a story for you that's going to turn your head.
Go for it.
You remember Michelle Kozelek? Convicted wife killer. Awarded the controversial sex change operation, taxpayer funded.
Right, in Boston, right.
Well, guess what she wants? Guess what the prisoner wants now?
What's
taxpayer
that?
Funded. Electrolysis.
Oh, so that you can't. So you can't grow hair.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
What? This gets even better. The judge, he wants to have TV cameras in the federal court, but the convict does not want that to happen. Maybe, you know, HD that the hairs will show up from her face, its face, his face. You can't make this up. Today was the hearing.
And?
Waiting for a ruling.
Oh, are they? That's just too much. Listen, the funny thing, I was talking, the reason why I'm talking about this whole cultural divide and the elections, I saw this story.
Hold on one second, before you get into another story. Dennis, are people in Massachusetts outraged by this? Is there any media coverage? Is anybody protesting this?
This is coming out of the BostonHerald.com.
Give a shit? Huh?
Today's paper. Today's BostonHerald.com. Headline, inmate fighting for electrolysis. Kozelek awarded sex change by state.
Okay, so do the taxpayers
okay,
of Massachusetts
let me take a look
have
at the comments and we'll see. We'll see what happens to the comments.
No, this will all be
said, well, they got the one comment says they got the electoral pot correct. Another one, says, enough is enough. This is beyond facile. Another one says, two suicide attempts. Man, I wish this freak of nature would try one more. Oh, this time gets lucky. I'm so tired of this thing's antics. Another one says, I think 20,000 volts should do the trick. These are the comments I'm reading, as you know.
Okay, but as Dennis, as absurd as the story is, what are the taxpayers of Massachusetts doing to put
in
your,
this is federal court.
What?
This is a federal court issue.
It's federal court. The voters have no say in this. This will be ruled by a judge. The people
this
have
is
nothing.
Being ruled by the
in
federal judge.
In federal court?
Yeah, sure.
Yes,
the taxpayers' money is being wasted. In fact, now my money.
United States District Court Chief Judge Mark L. Wolf.
Yeah.
He's the one that first said that the sex change was okay, and now he's the one hearing about the electrolysis, and he's the one that wants to have an open camera and is being vetoed by the convict. And the convict is also wants out of the men's prison and demands it go in the female prison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dennis,
And also asked the court to refer to him with female pronouns only.
Can you send me a link to the information with the judge's name and all that stuff? I want to check it out.
Yeah, sure. I'll share it right now. I'll give it as a private message on your Facebook.
Okay, thanks, Dennis.
No problem. I think Mary needs her own name besides Mary. How about Sapphire? Because she sounds so black.
Did you say Sapphire?
Yeah, sure enough.
How about Onyx?
Sapphire from Amos and Andy.
From Amos and Andy.
Yes.
The reason why I brought up this whole thing about, you know, the disconnect now and the Republican Party and conservatives retreating. I don't believe true Republicans are retreating. I mean, Republicans are retreating, for that matter. There's a report out that says that they did some survey where 45% of people are opting out of Christmas. Now people want to opt out of Thanksgiving. So tradition be damned in this country. I believe that there are plenty of people in this country that believe that the re-election of Barack Obama is now giving them a foothold on changing the size and scope of how it is that this country works. It's a complete condemnation, if you will, of traditionalism in this country. Sally D is on the line with us 15 minutes to the top of the hour. How you doing, Sal?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to make one comment. Dennis, I know Michelle Kozelik. You're no Michelle Kozelik.
Did you take your hat off for this?
Yeah, it's absurd. And, you know, I think the reason the Massachusetts voters aren't up in arms over this one is because Deval Patrick issued a illegal aliens, get to college for free day. Did you hear about that?
Yes.
What? Massachusetts, Reese.
He's a mini-me to Barack Obama. But Obama did the same thing, and so he's copying it.
In-state tuition for illegal aliens, they were talking about it today, so it kind of overshadowed the transgender inmate issue.
So he wants in-state tuition rates for illegals living in the state of Massachusetts.
Not he wants. He issued. He didn't go to anybody to okay it. He just issued it. It's in effect.
Everything free in America.
Apparently.
You know, so this is what you deal with in Massachusetts. So you start getting punched about the head so much, you just get a little numb to all of it.
Yeah, that's about it, Sal. You know, you hear it. What can you do? Because it's blow after blow after blow. It's like, what next? Nothing surprises you anymore, and you just say, yeah, well, that's the way it is. Everywhere else, you'd be outraged.
You know, I mean, is it my imagination, or has the country just seemed to change in really quick time since the election? There's just this horrific, bleak feeling across the country, at least the people that are the working people. You've got all this stuff going off in the Middle East. You've got a defiant administration on the Benghazi issue. This is madness. What do you focus
on? And they're defiant because they know they can get away with it. So far.
Well, absolutely. I mean, nothing's going to come of any of these hearings. You know, the economy, the stock market's in the tank. You got Chris Christie games on Saturday Night Live. It's absurd. My head's spinning lately. There's just so much going on. Seem to rationalize much of it, And as a conservative,
and now you have a bimbo twink.
I honestly,
what an what a juxtaposition of names.
I don't know. You know what's left to talk about right now? Just sit back and watch the fireworks.
Yeah, but you know, with all of that, with the radicalism, if you will, that's coming from this party and this group, just liberalism in general. You know, again, I've heard this, and I'm really, really starting to believe this, is that what needs to happen is we have got to notice and witness the fundamental change in America in order for people to realize that it doesn't work. And, you know, I said this, you know, tongue placed firmly in cheek on Friday about the whole Twinkie thing. The reason why I say this is because, look, these people, everybody, or the young people in America, or liberals in this country, they're all from the show me state. They don't believe that anything is true until they can see it and it's tangible, until it's palpable. And what they need to do is see these fundamental changes and realize that it doesn't work. You know, Bill O'Reilly said this maybe even 2 weeks ago. He says, look, what we need to do is to sit back and watch this president completely fail fiscally in this country. It's going to destroy the Democratic Party for eons. For eons. And it's got to happen. Maybe in some sort of way, America has got to see on its own how bad its decisions were during this election. I think they
what's
it
going
to
take? Us glowing in the dark from a nuke?
Something
but
has got to happen.
You're right, okay? But the problem is that the end result is it's something we can't come back from. So you're absolutely right, because the people who have their hands open are never going to put their hand out, pull their hand away. The hand's always going to be out. And so no matter how bad it gets, as long as they're getting that life-sustaining check, do you think they're going to care if the rest of the country's falling down around its knees?
Well,
and
that's,
when it's
you know,
too late.
Well, wait a minute. But, Sal, think about that. Do you – I mean, I'll tell you what it is that I want, and call me crazy when I say this, but you know what I want to see? I want to see what's happening in Greece. I want to see the same thing that I saw in Canada when the G8 summit happened back in the early 2000s. Remember when those people were running through the streets throwing Molotov cocktails into the street? I want to
see. You know what keeps happening? You'll see people pulling moldings off of cars pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
How about this one? How about when we go to war with China?
Well, listen to me. The point is that that's what you're going to
do. I'm not kidding. I don't know if you heard what happened. They are in a position now. We're leaving an air base in the Azores, and China wants it. And if China gets it, that means they block the access to the Mediterranean, and they cut off our access to Europe and to Africa. Strategically, they have been waiting for decades for us to move out of the Azores. In America, it's always the bottom line, quick, we want it yesterday. China, they wait 100 years if they have to.
Oh, hell,
this is very dangerous.
Very, very patient. Very, very patient country.
Well, I'm not kidding. The Chinese premier just came back from a trip to Chile. He went by way of Africa. Who the hell goes by Africa from China? You go by the Pacific. You don't go by the Atlantic. There's a reason why he did that, and it's to check the United States with the Azores, and they're going to be starting patrolling the Atlantic. You watch.
So, you know, all of this discussion, you were talking about this issue in Israel and in the Gaza Strip, but, you know, the reality is with this thing that keeps escalating, I still believe this is a legitimate war at this point, but I still believe a lot of this was orchestrated to take Israel's ability, our eye off the ball with this other thing in Iran, because it's all this Muslim Brotherhood thing. So this little, not little skirmish at this point, but this particular thing forces them to address these rockets. They have to put troops in there. There's all this. They have to deal with it. So now Iran doesn't have to worry about Israel going into Iran.
Let me ask you this, Sal. Do you think, with given the commitments the United States has with the state of Israel, and if a major, real major conflagration happens, you think that'll also take the heat off Obama because you won't be talking about Benghazi anymore?
No. I'll tell you right off the bat, Barack Obama would rather be dealing with Benghazi than dealing with Israel and its issues with Gaza and now Egypt and now Turkey and, of course, Iran slithering around in the background. He'd rather deal with Benghazi.
Never forget, the Iranians are not Arabs. They're Persians.
Right.
And history has shown that the Persians and the Arabs never get along. The only thing that unites them now is Islam. And
that's right.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, as they say in the Levant.
Yeah.
It's not Charlie the Tuna out there. It's Jaws.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, that's the whole point. What they're doing in the background now with the reports of Iran supplying all of these missiles through Egypt into the Gaza Strip to fire on Israel now, some 50, I think it's somewhere near 50,000 missiles that are possibly going to be going into the Gaza Strip very, very soon, if not are arriving in days. Bottom line is that a ground war will have to be, and literally, this is the saddest part about all of this, that I believe, honestly, that Israel is being led into a trap. When I say a trap, is that they are being led into a trap that will be a catalyst to an all-out war with Egypt and with Turkey, with Jordan, definitely with Syria. Anyone who can get a piece of this will join in. They are waiting for a ground attack on Gaza. They're waiting for it. And they want Hezbollah and the Hamas to just give them the word. They can't fight. Too many other people are being killed. And they need help. And Egypt will respond immediately. The Muslim Brotherhood is pretty much taking over the presidency of Egypt. And there's no way that Israel is going to be able to fight a war on two different fronts. Because in essence, they'll be fighting in their backyard and in their front yard. And there's nowhere that they can win that war. They'll probably be annihilated. And the
They've
only
got
people,
nukes.
Well, no,
maybe
I understand.
35 of them.
I understand that they have nukes, but they can't use them. They cannot use them. I don't care how
the
much.
The other problem is Turkey. Remember, Turkey's a NATO member.
Turkey has completely changed their view on Israel.
I know that. That's
but
what I'm saying.
Again,
being a NATO member, the United States is going to be in the same position as it was in the Falklands / Malvinas. We had treaties with both the United Kingdom and Argentina.
And what do you think the end result's going to be with the United States under this administration? The only – you know what? When you turn around and you tell – I'm having a conversation with Benjamin Netanyahu telling him to scale it down, and your conversation with Hamas is – listen, we don't want you guys to be a member of the UN, and, you know, can we find a way to scale this down? What does this become? Hamas and Hezbollah is, in one sense, the same thing. Bottom line is, they don't want to scale it down. There's not going to be a ceasefire. There won't be a ceasefire. They will fire on them as often as they can, as much as they can, and as long as they're getting weapons from other places, they are from Egypt and, of course, from Iran. As long as they're getting weapons, that is only telling them, hey, look, go out there and defend yourself. We'll help you out.
And do you think the Israelis think anything about the Arab street? I don't.
If you really, really want to make a statement as far as Israel is concerned, if you really, really want to make a statement at this point, the moment that you start a ground offensive in Gaza, the moment that you do it, go straight at Iran. Scare the crap out of everybody. You just got to do it.
Well, the Saudis, say what you want, they hate Iran. They will publicly say that they love Iran or love Islam and hate Israel. Privately, it's always to Israel. You can overfly us to get at Iran.
If
think Sally might agree with that.
Well, you're 100% right, but the bottom line is that at this particular point, you know, Netanyahu said, we're hoping that Gaza gets the message. Did they get it? No.
Do they ever?
No, exactly. The bottom
line is... 1948, have they gotten the message?
Exactly. There's no more time for small talk. And, you know, I would pull a George W. Bush on this one if I were Netanyahu. You're either with us or you're against us.
The problem is Israel does not have the armaments to fight, you know, on two fronts or to launch legitimate offensives, especially on the ground. It's just not a winning strategy. They know it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think once the troops start moving that the rebels and the Assad regime in Syria would unite again with the Arab the Arab saying the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Dictum, that's the word.
You got to hope that doesn't happen. You're looking at a world war.
Hmm.
I mean, the Middle East, you know, if the Middle East starts to unite against Israel, I still don't know that this president would make a military move, but you've got to figure that you can't you just can't watch. I know Mike likes to say we can't, you know, if they got blown off the face of the earth, you know, it's not our problem, but we have...
It is our problem.
...strategic need. Forget about the rights and wrongs of it. I'm just... strategic need for an issue.
Suez, for one thing.
And, you know, there's no way we don't get drawn in. There's no way that Britain doesn't get drawn in. Any of the allies, no allies don't get... There's no way that this doesn't get larger. This thing's a mess.
I mean, look at the geography. Our oil comes from Hormuz. It doesn't go around the Horn of Africa. It comes up the coast again through the Suez Canal and the Mediterranean to America. That's a choke point. We're not going to allow that to be choked off.
That's right.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that, sadly, for this president, he is, I see personally, well, you know what? I'm going to save it for the top of the hour. It's important that I save it for the top of the hour because I'm going to explain to you what it is going to happen. It may sound a little radical, but give me a second. We'll go to the top of the hour, and I'll explain to you exactly what the President of the United States right now is presiding over. People think that I'm going over the top, but I promise you I know what it is that I'm talking about. It will be World War III. And the sad part about it is that it'll be based upon what happened in World War II.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, the vote is over, and we see that America has chosen bigger government by the slightest margins. Our founding fathers foresaw an event such as this. Thomas Jefferson said, I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of caring for them. Clearly, many of us are not happy. Jefferson also said a government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take everything you have. The election was not a landslide by any stretch of the imagination. It was more of a slippery slope that's rolling towards statism. I hope and pray that our people will see that freedom is always better than free stuff. Chuck Woolery, trying to save America. You know, it's getting harder every day. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
So it looks like the White House changed CIA talking points that called the attack in Benghazi to work of Al-Qaeda. The teensy tiny edit they made, the Al-Qaeda reference became an act of extremism, which then fed into the spontaneous mob narrative that, thanks to Susan Rice, spread like an office cold. From there, more people died. So now we know who pushed the video, I think. Now the question is why, and will they tell us? They're trying hard not to. This is an administration suffering from word-a-phobia, fear of using language to accurately describe stuff. They still consider Fort Hood massacre workplace violence, which is like calling Ted Bundy a bad boyfriend. Video-caused spontaneous upset is this week's euphemism for what we naively call terror. You've heard of doublespeak? This is triplespeak, designed to confuse the listener and hide unpleasant facts. But this isn't a George Orwell book, and four Americans are dead. So why this latest example of Obama speak? The timing. An Al-Qaeda attack before the election, that's like a jerk throwing up in the punch bowl. The whole Obama destroying Al-Qaeda story becomes shakier than an IKEA bookcase. So instead, let's blame an amateur video maker with about as much influence as a HuffPo blogger. In plain language, it's a cover-up. And so as the president talks about how great education is, he's really the great unlearner, meaning I get dumber every time I hear him, which is why the more he talks, the more I understand him.
Minutes after the hour, holla holla, pop your collar, it's Reese on the radio on this November 19, 2012. If you're just joining us, we're in the middle of a discussion about what is happening in Israel today, and Hamas fighters who were firing some, I think it's reported now, some 95 missiles into Israel. One of them hit an Israeli school today. The one thing that always makes me laugh is that you know, there are videos out there showing where some of these missiles that are being fired are right near schoolyards. And out of, like, schools, they're firing missiles from schools, Hamas is, for that matter, into Israel. And then when you bomb the missile site and you, like, kill a civilian or destroy a school, then Hamas is, oh, look, I can't believe these people are killing our family and our children. But they're firing from these, and these are supposed to be strategic locations. So if you fire on them, then you look like a villain. Look, there's no denying one thing, folks, and I know this might be a little harsh to say. But the bottom line is this, that Egypt, possibly Turkey, the surrounding areas, Libya, these Arab nations, they will be a part of the eradication of Israel. They're going to kill hundreds of thousands of people. They may kill a million, but I'm certain hundreds of thousands of people will be killed in Israel. Israel will be made to tie their hands. They will be made to watch Iran get nuclear power, possibly get a nuclear weapon. They will be made to watch those surrounding areas power up, become stronger, become more radical. Their lives will be lived in fear. And then these Arab nations will coordinate, come in, and do what it is that was done right before World War II. It's going to happen. There will not be concentration camps. There will not be scientific experiments. There will be flat out, at all cost, murder. Say what it is that you want about America's involvement with Israel, but we do not have an administration that is willing to lay down its lives or its soldiers to help Israel. We are dealing with an American electorate that is against war. It is punked out. It has pussied up, folks. That's what this American electorate is turned into. They are soft. We have bred a country of cowards. When they're screaming fear-monger to everyone else, they're only saying about themselves that they are peacenik punks. And this country will argue, no, don't help them.
No, do nothing. Let them fight their own battles. This all sounds familiar, folks. The United States did not want to get involved with World War II. Wanted no part in it. Let them fight it off themselves. We stood idly by. It took an attack on Pearl Harbor, folks, December 7, 1941. Please, nobody act like we were involved in that war. Yes, we did join in, and yes, we did free plenty of Jews, but we only got into it when it affected our interests. It was a lackadaisical approach. Huh? Anybody remember Pope John Paul II? Look how long it took him to apologize for Catholics. Non-response to the atrocities that were happening to people and to the Jews in Germany. John Paul II, I know you folks remember that. A couple of years before he died, when he finally denounced it. Israel knows that it's on its own. Don't let any of that other BS that Barack Obama says in his speech fool you. Standing with Israel is nothing. Nothing like fighting with Israel. There's a difference. This president will not tell you that he is going to take military action. He will not tell you that we will help and protect the right of Israel to be a state in the region. He will never, ever say that. And when the chips come down, I mean, folks, we're looking at Hamas, who has started attacking Israel, what, a week after the election? That means that somebody knows that Barack Obama is weak on the issue. They were waiting. If Mitt Romney won, they knew Mitt Romney was a supporter of Netanyahu, that he was going to stand pat. What do you need? We'll get you anything it is you need. How much money? How many weapons? What do you need? We'll get a flotilla out there. We will get you everything that you want. That's what would have happened, but they waited. Oh, Barack Obama won again? Bomb him. Just go on after them. That's what's happened, folks. And we will watch the second Holocaust. It's going to happen. And there's nothing that we can do about it. We will sit idly by and watch them destroy Israel. And trust me, once these Arab nations know, because remember what Israel is to them, that is the West. And if they can destroy Israel, if they can attack Israel, we're next. We're second on the list. Regardless of what your belief system is, we're next. And if they know that we won't help their help our own ally that's in the region, if they know that we are going to be lackluster and lackadaisical about helping them, they know we won't help ourselves. They know the Americans, they will not fight back. They do not want war. They know we punked out. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're going to be, you know, it's going to be Red Dawn. Oh, but hell if it don't look like it, though, don't it? Doesn't it look like it? Mary, we may have to leave the country. Sal Bennis, am I out of my mind here? Am I seeing the second Holocaust?
I just want to say one thing. I think you paint a pretty close picture, except what's the one thing Israel will never allow is its demise. And they will let off nukes. The only thing that stops that is full U.S. involvement. So
Dennis, one second. Sal, explain that, please. What do you mean with the only thing that stops that is full U.S. involvement? What do you mean?
So let's assume that this thing escalates and they band together, like you say, and some of these nations band together and decide this is a war against Israel. At that point, before they cross the border of Israel and actually invade as nations, the United States has to make a choice. They get involved militarily and say to all these nations, if you make any move, you're making a move against us. Or if we do not make that claim and we tell Israel we're not backing you, we're sorry, we can't afford to get involved right now for whatever reason, I think at that point Israel fires off what it has.
Well, I mean, we're funding them. Sure,
yeah.
We're funding Hamas. We're giving them money.
Oh, absolutely.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
We're giving a lot of people. Look at the hundreds of millions of dollars that we're giving Egypt.
And the money
and
that
Turkey.
We're giving them is going is proven that it's going right to the terrorists.
Hey, well, you know what?
To one of the biggest terrorists. It's UNWRA in Hamas. They have all these schools there for refugees. It's been reported that there's been bombs. Carmine put a great story on Facebook. I'll share it with everybody if nobody else saw it.
Who's the guy who just dropped off $500 million to Hamas a couple of weeks ago? You know, I get what you're saying, Dennis, but I don't believe. I know this president is going to lollygag all over the place to avoid having to deal with it. The only thing he does is stand down, stand down, stand down. Why is he telling Benjamin Netanyahu to stand down when they were fired on first?
The bottom line is this has nothing to do whether you love the Jews or hate the Yehudim. Israel is in the front line of terrorism, and we're next. They hate Israel. They hate us. And to those people who hate Israel, I would ask, before 1948, the Arabs were not too enamored with the West before. Take a look at the Crusades. Take a look at the history of the Muslims against the West. We see it in the invasion of Europe. We see it with Charles Hamel. He was called the Hammer, and he stopped them at the gates of Vienna. We see it with the Moors being expelled from Spain.
You know,
Americans have a short grasp of what history is. This has been going on for over 1,000 years.
That's the same thing. Like, people don't know. You want to talk about the Muslim Brotherhood and its history. Do you remember when the Muslim Brotherhood in the 40s said that they stood with Hitler?
Yes. The chief mufti of Jerusalem was a Nazi sympathizer.
The SS
had the Shah division, the Division Shah, and that was made of exclusively in Waffen-SS of Muslims in the Yugoslav area.
Exactly. So this, again, all I'm seeing is the second coming of the Holocaust. That's it.
It'll never happen. It will not happen because Israel will never allow it, especially because of that historical fact. When they see nations converge on them, they will use the full power of what they have at their hand. At
what have they got to lose?
Exactly.
That's what I would say. What have they got to lose?
The United States would never allow this to happen because it becomes the end of the world. At that point,
do you realize,
world,
and people might not know, Sal, you know this, if we were to take away the West Bank, at its narrowest point, Israel is only 10 miles wide.
That's right.
Doesn't take much to cut a country in two.
What I don't agree with is I'm not quite sure yet, because I've really been watching this thing. I'm not quite sure that this thing is not, what's the word I'm looking for? De-escalating. It can't be de-escalated. I haven't come to that conclusion.
Are you looking for Armageddon?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion this thing keeps going. I think it's still within the realm of people, both sides pulling back.
Do you want me to spook you?
Go for it.
Do you remember when they talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse and the trumpet is sounding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the water was rushing in at the site of the World Trade Center during Sandy, people said they swore that they could hear an eerie trumpet sounding as the water was rushing in. And they
really
said that, that when they would rebuild the tower, by quoting Isaiah, that was not the original meaning. It was keep building your towers like the Tower of Babel and be not humble, and you will be knocked down. And this was; these have been warnings from God. Now, it's for your discernment whether you wish to believe it or not. Take a look at, given that the shape of the storm Sandy looked like a pregnancy, and 40% of pregnancies are killed with abortion in New York. We have lost the corn crop. Also, if you take a look at the images in 9/11, some people said you could see demonic images in the flames and the pictures, and they weren't photoshopped.
Well,
it's,
I
again,
want to say one thing,
for your discernment.
You seen
I'm not gonna. I don't want to go that far, but it's something to consider.
I was watching
these,
Teletubbies
some of the things
and I saw
that
the head of Saddam
about.
Hussein and Gaddafi. And
what's that, Sal?
No, I was watching Teletubbies.
I'm just complimenting. I'm just trying to lighten the moment, Dennis. You're taking us down a dark path.
Well, no, because in the end, if we're going to talk Armageddon, we win in the end.
Well, I don't
we
think
all win.
I don't think that there's a choice in this. Let's get Edward in here. Edward in Connecticut, how are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going, Reese?
What's going on?
Hey, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you believe my analysis is right? Are we watching the second coming? Are we watching the second Holocaust?
It could possibly be. I mean, Israel has enough nukes to, you know, turn their whole area into a freaking parking lot. So it won't be the type of Holocaust that we've seen in the past. I think what's going to be key is possibly America's, you know, putting some strong, very strong backing behind Israel and say, look, you know, you guys got to straight crap out. But I really don't see that coming from this administration because country after country in that area is turning more hostile against us every day. You know, from Libya, Egypt, you know, all these Arab countries are turning against us. The United States. So.
But sure, Edward, sure they're coming after us, but we have an administration that isn't even willing to acknowledge they're coming after us. I mean, they have tried, they've done everything to marginalize the truth of the matter.
Why would the administration you know, acknowledge that when they're one partially responsible for it? Look in Libya. You know, we had no reason to go into Libya and take that man out of power, but, you know, we're the ones who have this hostile, you know, put the hostile government in there now. So, of course, they're not going to mention it. They're responsible for it.
Not only that, the Libyans were doing everything we had asked them to do. They had dismantled their nuclear program. They were doing what we asked, and what did they get? A bullet in return.
A knife in the butt. That's what they got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which sounds exactly
like I said last
part.
Week, when you want to help the United States, this is what you get.
Yeah, but you know what? Bottom line being, the truth of all of this is that with a country that is trying in every way whatsoever, because now this administration, what I believe right now, this administration believes that the only enemy that Americans have is Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-like operatives, so to speak, right? They believe that that's
now,
being
there's
sort
another
of,
enemy that the administration sees. You and me, we're Republican. We're the enemy.
Yeah, but I'm saying that what they believe is that our true enemy is Al-Qaeda. They don't view the Muslim Brotherhood as an enemy. They don't believe that Muslim Brotherhood is an enemy of the West, even though they've never feared proclaiming it, never hesitate in saying it. With all of that, knowing that these Arab nations are talking about down with the West and down with Israel, this administration isn't acknowledging them as a threat at all. The only thing you hear from this administration in our country is we need to find a way to coexist with them, not fight them off, not let them know we're not going to tolerate our annihilation or you coming over here to attack us. You just hear it's like, how can we work it out?
And, Reese, no, that is the key between the two different administrations, between this one and the previous one. This one, the Democrat administration, seeks your enemy is a police action and needs to be arrested. And the Bush administration, Republican administration, said your enemy is a military action and you need to hunt them down with the military and kill them.
That's it. But you know what? But this whole belief that killing them in some sort of – I mean, killing them to them is considered a hostile action. and they believe in conflict resolution because this is how they were raised, how to deal with each and every one of their issues. You don't agree with someone, you talk it out.
Like I said, they believe it's Charlie Tuner out there and not Jaws.
Yeah, I you're probably right. I mean, I guess that's the way that most of them would look at it.
They look at it as, we're going to solve the problem with the UN. And the UN will sing around the fire, the campfire, and sing kumbaya. We'll have some rough spots, but in the end, everything will be okay. Because mommy will give us a cookie.
Well, you know,
sounds simple, but you know, this is their thought process, that we're idiots if we want to defend ourselves, because the resolution of conflict always has to be without fisticuffs.
Guys, we get a friggin' storm in New Jersey, and you'd think it was, you know, you'd think the world came to an end. People cannot deal with any kind of scenario or situation that puts them out of their comfort zone.
Yeah.
What
would
happen if a nuke went off in the world, and then another one went off, and then another one went off, and even if you managed to cooler heads prevail after three or four went off, the amount of damage done.
Sal, never mind a nuke.
Weapons,
what about an EMP? It doesn't take much for an electromagnetic pulse to be launched from a so-called neutral ship and knock out electrics, because nothing is protected. We didn't shield any of our wires.
So there's a lot going on. It's all bleak, and we're showing ourselves to be weak, and that's never good in this kind of a situation.
You know why? This is why I think we're showing ourselves to be weak, because the people of this country are not forcing the people that they are paying to run this country and keep us safe. We are funding their money. We're funding their way to live. We're funding their $500 jacket, $800 tennis shoes, and they're doing nothing for us. So those of us that do try to bring the subjects up, talk about it, you know, keep it going so that people can do something, there has to be something other than just talking about these things that we can do.
You know, this is where I've come to after really analyzing things. Thousands of years ago, these people would have been in a little clan. And then you'd have the clan that had intelligence and weapons. And they all would have been slaughtered in an open field. And they would have been taken off the planet. And nature would have had its course.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore. There's no checks and balances for stupidity. So
yeah,
doesn't matter what we think. We're no longer the majority. Where does that leave you?
So, Sal, when you think of it, the European ancestors mostly came from strong stock because they were able to leave Europa and come to America. And from them, their children became us. The America that we grew up with, but now it's been diluted by stupidity, and it didn't take much because bad money follows good.
You know, it's funny that you know you say that, Dennis, about the sort of the dilution, I guess, if you will, of this country and its ideals and its ideology. What really, really hurts this country in that way is that now we don't have sort of that, we don't have that support, we don't have that support of military action the way that we did during the Greatest Generation. You know, when someone went off to war, they went off to war. You know, someone joining the military was an honor to do that. You know, someone went off to war, they went off to fight for the country, that was the ideal. Now, somebody joins the military, and the attitude is, somebody, like John Kerry said, you know, when that off-color joke that he said back during the 2004 election, when he said, you know, you go to school, you get a great education, if you don't, you end up fighting in Iraq.
Well, you're too young. I don't know what Sal's age is, but I remember when the guys came home and they'd be spit upon in the California airports coming back from Nam.
Absolutely. But again, this was a peace. And it's interesting that this was a quote-unquote peace and love generation.
And that peace and love generation is the establishment today, and that's the problem.
Exactly. But I'm saying that these were the peace and love generation that was spitting on, cursing at, and besmirching the character of those brave Americans, but yet they were called the peacenik generation,
mm-hmm.
which is insanity.
I remember in Boston seeing the enemy's flag being paraded downtown Boston. They singing, "Ho, ho, Ho Chi Minh, the NLF is going to win." Made me sick.
And it should. And it should. Let's take a break. I got to talk about Thanksgiving. It's coming up in a couple of days. We're going to take Thursday and Friday off.
Does that mean you're a jive turkey?
Yes, I am a jive turkey. We'll be back. Stick around. We'll be back. We'll talk about that. And this whole Walmart scandal that's going on. Workers are threatening to walk out on Thursday. So we'll get to that when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
That is going to be something big.
Back where we at. Radio returns right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Yeah, yeah, yo, yo, this one's for the people. All the bees that are bleeding and sleeping, the east and breeze. I thought we all equal. Ain't a man on the God's green bee underneath any other. I don't wanna play preacher, but I swear they turn an ear when we talk about peace and love. Sometimes might need a hug. Yeah, we all wanna come on up above, but this ain't about Jesus. No way, no Abe, no Ike, Moses or Muhammad. Yeah, it's all about believing. Full steam ahead because you know the worst times are behind me. I don't wanna sound cheesy, but it's just to really mean it.
Some people are making an argument like that's not enough money. I'm like, that's not enough money?
It's not. I mean,
I take a $12.35 an hour job.
No.
I've taken less than that.
Okay.
I'm taking a $9
okay,
an hour
listen,
job.
If I didn't have
at my age.
Wait a minute. Okay, let me put it to you like this. If I didn't have a job and a $12.35 an hour job was the only job that I could get, I would proudly take it
of
any
course.
Day. No shit. You know, nothing. No questions asked. But is it enough money for people to live on? No, that's not even middle class. That's lower middle class.
Hold on. Don't you just cut down on things that you don't need? I mean, you don't. You know, you shouldn't have things that you don't want to. I mean, that you can't afford. I mean, you just scale it back.
No, you do scale it back. But if you're just one person, you're single and you're making $12.35 an hour.
Well, what's that got to do with the holiday?
Listen, you know, you're talking about, we were talking about whether that's enough money. It's not really enough money.
But
to
they're
going to
get double time. I mean, I'm sure they're going to get holiday pay. Do they get holiday pay on
Well, if you work on, if you work, no, if they work on Thanksgiving, because these stores are talking about being
pay.
Open on Thanksgiving.
Right.
That's
holiday
time
pay.
And a half.
Right.
No, actually, it's double time because you get paid for the holiday.
Right.
And you're getting paid for your hours. So
right.
That's double time. But I don't necessarily – do you think that that's what this walkout is about? I think
the walkout is about the fact that they're being made to work on the holiday.
Well,
Thanksgiving
but the walkout may be more about other things. Isn't Walmart one of the companies that's about to start scaling back people's hours so they can take away insurance and all that? So these people are probably like, you know what? You're going to scale back our hours. You're going to take away our insurance. So we're going to spite you back. By walking out and not working on Thanksgiving, one of the busiest
in
days.
And of itself, I still think that people are griping.
But they are still losing out, but
these
they're trying to make a
point. People don't care about the holidays anymore. 45% of people said they opt out of Christmas. They don't care about these holidays anymore. Guys, would you work on the holiday if they asked you to, or would you just not work?
Tell you I'd work on a holiday. I've done it in the past, but do it again.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's a guy thing.
In a heartbeat, especially with holiday pay.
Yeah. Are you insane?
That's kind of a guy thing. Guys are like, yeah, man, I'm going to work.
No,
it depends what the holiday is.
No, I work with a lot of women. If you offer them overtime, they will be there to take that money. I don't see it as a guy thing or a girl thing. It's great stuff.
Let me tell you, and there's a huge difference, especially a cultural difference, because I find personally – I found growing up, especially in getting into my in-laws, especially dealing with my in-laws, they find Christmas Eve way more important than Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
White people, period.
Yes.
Okay.
And Latinos, they celebrate Christmas Eve. They don't celebrate on Christmas Day.
No, they wait until after the 1st on the 6th. Get out of here.
Window shop.
Hey, Justin, what's up?
What's up?
What's going on? Hey, Justin, I mean, I don't know. Are you old enough to work yet? Are you working yet?
No, I can, but I'm not.
Okay, would you work on holiday?
Yeah, I would.
All right, Justin, how about if it's Super Bowl Sunday? That's your holiday.
I'm not working Super Bowl Sunday now. No, I'm not.
Hey, there you go. Depends whose holiday it is.
Yeah, Super Bowl Sunday. I'm not working that
day. I was working a full-time job at Strayer University, working part-time at Wawa, and taking classes a few years ago. But Wawa kept scheduling me early every Sunday morning. I had to be there early, and I had to work from, 6:30 to, 2:30. They started cutting into my game time. I was tired. I couldn't go out on Saturday nights. So I had to give that job up. Only because it was football.
Back in,
and I was like, I got to go. I'm sorry.
Back in 2001, I used to work for Goldman Sachs. And to come in on a holiday, they would pay you overtime plus holiday pay. So basically, you were getting holiday pay plus 1.5 times your normal salary. Hell yeah, I'm coming in.
Hell yeah, I'm coming in too, especially if I'm making $12.35 an hour.
And you can survive on that kind of money down in Charlotte.
That you could, but here's my question. Why do you believe that there's – do you believe that the retailers are responsible for the disconnect now with the holiday?
Well, we saw this coming back in the 70s.
I do. And I believe that the retailers are – well, I believe the retailers, the economy, everything, and the greed, the selfishness is responsible for the lack of gumption to you know –
So you believe the commercialization has annoyed people so much that they don't even want to be a part of it anymore.
Some people don't want to be a part of it anymore because they're annoyed, and some people don't want to be a part of it because they can't afford it. Some people don't want to be a part of it because they know they can't be because they have to work and they have to, you know, break their asses to make ends meet to get by. Like, you know, I don't have time for Christmas. I gotta work on Saturday, I gotta work Thanksgiving, I gotta work on Friday, I gotta work on Christmas, I gotta work on Christmas Eve. People, it's too much.
Right.
You know, if you wanna take a sick day from work nowadays, most of the time, that's an issue for most people. Especially if you work in a retail industry.
Right.
So I can't, I work all this, I earn my sick days, you give me a hard time when I call out, I need a mental health day or some shit, and now you want me to work on, I don't know, and it's Monday, and now you want me to, you know, work on the holiday too?
Let me ask you this, guys, here's an interesting question. I'm going to give you, let's say, a five-year rating, okay? I'm going to give you a five-year rating. It's 2012 this year. I'm going to go back to 2007. From 2007 up until 2012, how much of a percentage rate have you scaled down or scaled up your Christmas shopping or purchasing since 2007 in the past 5 years? I'll go with Dennis first.
Ho, 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 and I don't mean the Drake's cake.
Have you scaled it up or down, and how much a percentage would you say since 2007?
I plead the fifth.
Really?
Justin's listening, and he probably wants a gift for Christmas, so I can't mention anything.
Okay, Justin, since he doesn't work, I can't ask him. What about you, JC? Have you scaled it up, you scaled it down?
Well, 2004, Mom passed. 2007, Dad passed. 2007, I left a wife. My daughter was already grown, out on her own. My son had already had a job, moved to the other part of the state, didn't want to spend Christmas with me. I don't think I bought crap on 2007. Not until my grandson came along in 2008. Yeah, I really scaled back. My kids are grown. They don't want nothing.
Oh, you know what, JC? Don't say that shit. My kids are grown. I scale back. Ain't nobody got no money. The economy is in a downturn. Because I've scaled back tremendously. Because
she
I
sat
got
by
a
says for me. I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, you know what? That's true. So it came at a good time for me. I mean, it's prior. Yes, years prior is when I went bananas. But you're right.
Times is hard.
On the boulevard.
Yeah, you're right.
So, Edward, what about you? Because I don't know if you have any children or anything. So, have you scaled up, scaled down, or?
If he doesn't have children, I know he has dogs.
Yeah, I don't have any kids, but my Christmas spending is exactly the same.
Okay,
the only gifts I buy are people I've been buying gifts for my whole life.
Right. So it's always stayed the same. You've got like that solidified list of people who always get a gift every year.
Exactly. The only changes have been two nieces that were born. Other than that, it stayed the same.
Well, how would everybody else? I don't blame you. I mean, you don't buy extra pig ears for the dog.
Yeah, even my wife and I don't buy each other Christmas gifts.
You really?
No?
So you don't? You. Now, but see now.
Now
somebody
hold
like,
on. Wait, hold whoa, on. Whoa, 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 step in here. I'm sorry. You have a list of people that you buy presents for, but your wife and yourself don't buy each other presents?
Oh, boy.
Hell no. Your wife is the one that deserves the present, and you're the one that deserves the present. If anybody, screw everybody else. Get yourself something.
No, I mean, he's getting for his nieces.
We don't take the time to make it special. Like, if I see something that I think she likes, you know, I'm out somewhere, I see a pair of earrings, I'll buy them for her. She sees something I think that she thinks I like, she'll buy it for me. You know, we do buy each other birthday presents, but Christmas presents is just another stress to an already stressful, you know, season. You know, why do that to each other?
Do you put up a Christmas tree?
No. We did it once when we first bought our house just to do it. But it was such a mess because we bought a real tree for the first time in our lives, and it was such a goddamn mess we said never again.
You know what?
You were fine as pine needles for years.
Exactly.
Hey, Edward.
Never get rid of them, Edward.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
There's some in your crown molding right now waiting for you to find.
Well, Edward, I mean, a personal question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. But your wife, her ethnicity...
She's American, but her ethnicity is Bajan. Her family's from Barbados.
Okay.
Bajan, that's what's up. That's what my father
said. I'm sure they have a lot of fir trees in Barbados.
No. What I found was my kid's mother is white. Good old American white bread.
Yeah, we know that, JC.
But, no, I... No. It's weird because they give gifts on every single holiday except for 4th of July.
You know why? You know why, JC? Because they feel guilty. They got to give gifts. That's what they do.
I mean, to each other. I mean, they really celebrate Grandparents' Day. You got to buy gifts. Easter, definitely Easter is like another Christmas.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do they own stock in MasterCard?
No, but I think they should probably in a Christmas tree shop by now.
Wow.
That's where they get most of their shopping at.
Oh, the Christmas tree shop? I hate that place.
Yeah.
I hate that place. Okay, listen, moving on. Did anybody hear this new story that was in the New York Post today?
What story?
Okay, this is a great story. I love this story because I can't get away from it. I don't care how many years ago it passed, but it's about OJ.
Oh boy! My
exactly.
Hero. Go ahead.
Okay, so it's by Linda Stacey.
He found the killer.
Apparently, they have.
Was he looking in the mirror?
Linda Stacey, who's the critic of the New York Post. There's a TV show that's coming on called My Brother the Serial Killer, which airs Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on the ID channel. Now, her story says, have you ever heard of Glenn Rogers? Probably not, because Glenn Rogers is one of America's least known serial killers, 70, possibly 80 people. But wait, he's also most likely the real murderer of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. ID's feature-length documentary goes back over Rogers' life and his crimes through interviews with police, prosecutors, and with his family, most notably his former non-murderous partner in crime, his brother Clay Rogers, who taught Glenn how to steal at an early age. Not only did Clay cooperate fully in this documentary, but he is the person who turned Glenn in when he discovered a rotting corpse in the family's broken-down cabin in the woods in Hamilton, Minnesota. The corpse was that of an elderly male neighbor, one of the very few men it turned out Glenn had killed at the moment. At the moment, Clay realized that all those tall tales his brother was telling him about killing 50 people were tragically true. Since killing 50 people isn't the kind of thing most people brag about, you'd have thought his brother would have figured it out, but he didn't. Then again, the whole family thought Glenn was lying when then handsome lunatic told his family that he was partying with a woman in L.A. named Nicole Brown Simpson just before she was murdered.
Really?
When Rogers phoned his family in 1994, according to the film, he actually said he was working and partying with her and that she was rich and that he was going to take her down. A few years after the murders, when Rogers was already on death row for other murders,
he admitted to a criminal profiler that he killed Simpson and Goldman. And there is at least some proof to back him up, including receipts that shows Rogers had been in working construction in the area at that exact time. So,
and when is this show coming out?
On Wednesday at 9 o'clock on the IG.
There you go. And Wednesday is what month?
Wednesday is what?
You know where I'm going with this.
Which,
the November sweeps.
Wednesday? Wacky Wednesday?
No, the November sweeps.
Oh, of course.
November what?
November sweeps.
Oh. No. But that's not like, that's not a channel that really, really looks for,
publicity.
That looks for ratings. If you've ever watched that channel, all it shows is like, I call it the Burning Bed Channel, because all it shows is women who kill their husbands.
Oh, really?
And these people who kill their husbands shop also. They have to go out and at least buy lighter fluid.
No, but seriously, all they do is show is women who kill their husbands. A woman scorned. I'm tired of hearing about Dorothy Benbenek.
Go, Bambi, go.
Yeah, exactly. And they have this story that they keep playing over and over about these old ladies. I mean, they were really old ladies out in California who kept taking out insurance policies on these old bums. And then when the bums didn't die from them, forced them to drink, they'd go out and run them over with cars. That's a true story.
So, okay, so you don't believe that any of this is possible?
I believe it's possible. But they wouldn't do it for the ratings. I'm surprised that a network hasn't picked that up.
But wait, it gets better. Rogers seems to know things about the murder that only the killer could have known, including a step-by-step description of the exact sequence of the killings, which had eluded prosecutors and cops. And O.J. did, in fact, know the killer, the film said. So why didn't O.J. bring out all of this at trial or even before he was charged?
Because he paid for it.
O.J. paid him to do
this. Aha, hold on. Wait, I'm going to tell you. Because according to Rogers, O.J. had paid him to break into her house and steal a pair of $20,000 earrings the football star had given her. Rogers claims O.J. also told to kill the bitch if necessary.
Oh, crap.
Who owned the gloves?
This proves my theory.
What if the glove fits this suit?
This proves my theory. Because of the blood that was on the Bronco on the passenger side. This proves my theory.
You don't want to revisit that case with me. He couldn't have been there. He couldn't have been. That was.
I think race is a racist, picking on the black folk all the time.
F that black man.
He couldn't have been at the house and on the way to the airport at the same time. If you remember, the jury only wanted to rehear the testimony
of
the limousine driver.
He worked. He worked for Hertz for many years. You saw him running through the airport. He could do it.
But doesn't this also go into the narrative? Think about this, okay? What do we do know about O.J. and what he was found guilty of? Did O.J. come along with his friends who tried to steal his memorabilia back at gunpoint? He went along for that ride along, didn't he?
No, because he was going in there himself, too.
But that's my point. He went there alone.
I mean, it was his that it was stolen.
He was very hands-on. Now,
okay.
O.J. showed up and wanted him to get these two $20,000 earrings and kill the bitch if possible. I mean, if necessary. Come on.
The only thing, but you know what? The timeline doesn't add up. What I mean by that is, they tested the content of her stomach and found that she was eating Chunky Monkey ice cream. And they also tested with the weather service the temperature that was outside, because they found the first thing that Van Atta found was a half-eaten container of Chunky Monkey that wasn't fully defrosted. Well, they ran tests in a climate-controlled lab, and it took a certain amount of time for that to defrost, which means that she had what they found in her stomach, and according to what they found in the container, it hadn't been out long enough for him to have been there, to have done this, if he was already on the way to the airport. They were killed a little later than what they believe the timeline was. I told you, I got my law degree on this case.
Did you now?
Yeah. Yeah. I got my law degree on this case.
Well, I still think, look, it's quite plausible. I'm still going to watch it, though. I'm going to try to watch it.
You have a meter on your television set so it can be logged in for Nielsen.
No, I don't.
Dennis, in order to get that channel, you have to have expanded basic. I mean, you have to have expanded digital cable.
Yeah, that's right. We have.
I don't think it's about ratings on that one.
Well, I'm going to check.
I'm from the old school, you know, November, February, and May, sweeps month.
Yeah, and that's surprising because I think CBS owns that channel. If not, I think Oprah owns a piece of it. Why won't she put it on OWN, her fledgling network? Because she owns some of Discovery, doesn't she?
No, but Discovery owns some of her.
Still should have put it on her show.
Because that's
when
they
had Kato Kaelin on.
That's true. I don't know. All right. Well, that's it for our show today, folks. I'm going to watch the show anyway.
Hey, quick
tomorrow,
story, Reese.
Like I said,
hey, Reese.
Go ahead, real quick.
One quick story that I want you to look at for tomorrow. This guy in Connecticut, everyone might remember this if you've seen it on the news. Guy in Connecticut got pissed at, he wanted to move into this apartment. And the landlord told him no, and the son bitch burnt the house down.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody we know?
No. I think, well, I'm not going to call it a niggable time, but it's a niggable time story. But I'll bring it up tomorrow. I'll show it to you tomorrow.
Okay, don't forget the beatdown in D.C. by the principal. I gave you that story.
Yeah. I got that. We got to do Jigaboo time tomorrow. Okay, so tomorrow we're supposed to have Dr. Robert Rose on the show. He's supposed to be an educational expert. We're going to talk about racism all day. No, it's racism all the time on Reese on the Radio. Thank you, guys, as usual. Edward in Connecticut. And Justin from Justin.
Salt on the Radio.
Alabama.
Straight out of good old Alabama.
Road High.
Dennis the Mass Menace, and of course, Sally D up in Massachusetts as well. We will see you guys tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel, as usual. Back. Enjoy the night. We'll see you tomorrow.
Y'all
I'm going to go clean my chimney down.